another episode of Two Guys, One Level, a place where two guys talk about all things gaming. I'm your host, Tortuga, accompanied by Pixel.
And welcome back, everybody. It's currently April 9th, and we are ready to go. To kind of start things off, since we had the Star Wars celebration a couple days ago, let's talk about Star Wars Jedi Survivor, the sequel to Jedi Fallen Order. They had just released the system requirements, and they're kind of hefty. Even the minimum is requiring 8 gigs of RAM with a Ryzen 5, at least 1400, and they're asking for 155 gigabyte for storage. And then for the recommended settings, still on the Ryzen 5, but they want the 5600X on AMD. And then, of course, that's the i5 equivalent. And they're asking for a 2700 on the recommended, and I'm sorry, on the lowest, the minimum, they want a GTX 1070. But still asking for 155 gigabytes, but on an SSD for now. Game is about a month away, if I'm not mistaken. I want to say it comes out in May. I apologize. It comes out April 28th, so it's just coming out at the end of the month. But wow, that is pretty massive for this kind of Star Wars semi-Metroidvania kind of game. So kind of curious, why so large? Come ahead and Call of Duty numbers over here.
Basically. And another big thing from the spec sheet you read was the fact that 1060 is no longer the minimum.
Yeah, that's another thing, because we were still getting games under the 970 for the minimum
for a while. Yeah. And then 1060, you know, people were holding strong because that was like the next big seller as far as, you know, best bang for your buck. But words are hard. Best bang for your buck as far as GPUs came. So yeah, 1070 as the minimum. Very curious to see what they're going to be pulling when the game releases on the higher end cards, because if this is the minimum, I'm expecting, you know, pretty bad performance on the higher tier cards. That's usually the trend,
right?
So yeah, that's interesting. We'll see. That's all we can do is keep an eye on it once it comes out. I got an interesting topic. We talked about it before. You remember, the magician named Kadabra that sued Nintendo over making that Pokemon card ages ago, like 20, 21 years ago, maybe even 22 years at this point.
I do remember that.
And we also discussed the fact that, you know, either he got over it or the contract ran out or whatever, but Nintendo was permitted to release a Kadabra card again with, you know, spoons as an image. Because that was the whole thing. This guy was a magician, and his whole thing was he was able to bend spoons with his mind, right? So there was just too many coincidences with Kadabra the Pokemon and Kadabra the magician that, you know, won him that lawsuit. So that lawsuit has been lifted. I think it's been a couple years since. And the first printing is set to come out later this year with a new set called the 151 set, where they're going to release the original Pokemons with updated art, but still hit the nostalgia factor for Gen 1 Pokemon.
Bro, that's pretty insane. That actually got me a little bit of hype. But Nintendo and this guy made one very, very large mistake with his lawsuit. They have to remember that there is no spoon.
Wow.
You're welcome.
And that's going to do it for today's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed. Thank you for hanging out with us.
Do you have more? I was going to piggyback off of that.
Well, I was going to piggyback off of it myself. With Nintendo, you know, they can never do good things for too long. They're once again went after a major player in the speedrun scene and the mod community, you know, two hit combo here, where a YouTuber named Point Crow created a mod that basically lets you multiplayer Breath of the Wild.
I just saw that.
Yeah, and Nintendo slapped him with the cease and desist, and they took down his video of him showcasing this on his YouTube, and basically said, you know, don't do that. Which Nintendo, this is not a new play for them. It's just incredibly annoying, and they just refuse to accept that speedrunning. Or they're not punishing speedrunning in this point, but speedrunning and mods in the, it's a core part of the gaming community as a whole. And you know, every time someone keeps, because these activities keep older games alive, they keep things interesting, they keep things fresh, they keep things active, and when Nintendo knocks it down, it kills a lot of interest, you know, especially in those areas in the gaming community. So it's a little annoying seeing Nintendo continuously do this. You would think that they would just learn their lesson. Well, I mean, in the end, they don't think that they're losing out on anything. They find it more cost effective. Just put a stop to it now, so we don't permit, you know, lose something more valuable in the future. That's kind of like the logic there, but it's just incredibly annoying.
All right, I see your good news, bad news, and raise you my good news, bad news. speaking of Nintendo, on the Nintendo 64 expansion side, we are actually getting Pokemon Stadium 1 next week. So that was really exciting to see. However, they're doing it without the transfers. So you won't be able to transfer Pokemon from Game Boy titles, Red, Blue, and Yellow. So that's kind of a shame.
How would you?
I don't know. Maybe Pokemon Home or something? I don't know. I feel like they could have.
I feel like Pokemon Home doesn't support those, because there was no online environment to get Pokemon Home to work. I mean, maybe, but I haven't heard of anything.
I know it's just going to disappoint some people. Not me personally, because I'm there for the mini games.
Bro, let me tell you, the mini games, using your personal Pokemon for those mini games was clutch. So it does kind of suck that you can't do that. I hope you can import it from a later version, you know?
Maybe, I don't know. As of right now, there's nothing about a transfer to... Well,
that does suck. That was a pretty core part of that game.
Yeah. And then that was semi-good news. And now we have our bad news. This time coming from our boys over at Microsoft. As of right now, looks like people were able to install emulators on their Xbox Series X consoles. They actually got a direct reply from Microsoft on this. So this is verbatim from the Xbox QA team. Hi there. Thanks for getting in touch with us about the recent ban on emulators on the Xbox storefront. We appreciate your interest and concerns. To answer your questions, the primary reason for the ban is related to legal issues with Nintendo. While emulating itself is not illegal, it can be used to play games from consoles that are still under copyright protection without permission. We can create issues with Nintendo and its affiliates. Additionally, we take security seriously, and some emulators require permissions beyond what is typical for an app. This could create potential security risk, as these permissions can be exploited by bad actors to gain access to sensitive information. For these reasons, we have made the decision to ban emulators on the Xbox storefront. So I 100% understand that from the security standpoint. But if people want to take that risk, I feel like that should be up to them one way or another. It's their information. So if they want to mess around and put themselves at that risk, that should be up to them. So it just kind of sucks that that's something that was removed, because it was on like the actual storefront, apparently. It's not like people were modding their Series X to gather this.
I mean, that's pretty cool that the fact that was on there. I get where Microsoft is coming from, because they do hold an obligation to keep people secure, even if they don't want to. So it's a delicate thread. You have to pick a side, and you're not going to be able to please everyone, and especially in those types of cases. But I'm all for forcing people to be more secure versus letting them choose, because most people will just ignore it and not heed the warnings, or think that they're above it. So, and ultimately, if they compromise their console in a way, they could even compromise the Xbox Live Network. If someone is sophisticated enough, you know, if they could find a way to manipulate anything. So I think Microsoft made the right call.
I, for the most part, do too. I just it kind of sucks. And, you know, while ultimately they did cite Nintendo in that email, Nintendo did not have any part of this. I think they were just protecting themselves in case Nintendo found a way to blame Microsoft for this in the future.
Which they would have 100%. Nintendo would have went full Nintendo, no doubt about it.
And then to kind of move on from that, but still on Xbox, there's a rumor that Game Pass will start including Ubisoft Plus games.
That's pretty neat. I'm telling you, it's the future, man. It's gonna be the future. It's gonna be on everything. I can't wait for it to hit Sony's platform,
bro.
You think I'm playing?
You're running out of a heart attack.
Yeah, like they're gonna have a choice. I can't wait until Microsoft have enough IPs that they force PlayStation to just add an app for a Game Pass, bro. I'm telling you.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting to see. Kind of going back on the retro lawsuits, do you remember when we covered these? I want to say they were some mod developers that they ended up reverse engineering Grand Theft Auto 3 and I think Vice City as well. And were able to like basically rebuild it with like their own code. No? Okay. It's fine. Essentially, Take-Two, the parent company of Rockstar, they basically sued them. And it was like just right around before they announced that definitive edition for the Grand Theft Auto trilogy. But they actually ended up dropping the lawsuit themselves against them.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a fresh take.
I totally just lied to you. They made an undisclosed settlement with them, but overall that legal action is over. Gotcha. But yeah, it was very interesting to see, because remember that trilogy, Grand Theft Auto trilogy, that definitive edition was not well received at all. It was so mixed with everything, and it's considering an atrociously botched port, considering that all of those games had mobile versions that were really highly praised, especially the San Andreas one, which had the most complicated controls.
Hmm.
Yeah, so yeah, that was...
It's pretty interesting. I'm surprised that they were able to come up to a settlement for something like that, because, I don't know, it's... Because who paid out who?
I think the modders paid Take-Two.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
And the game is allowed to continue?
I believe so.
Yeah, that's interesting. They did not go the full Nintendo playbook on that one.
They did not.
Because, I mean, honestly, that's almost the way that it should play out when you think about it. They're just making sure that they're getting paid for their IP. They created, you know, the groundwork for it, made it popular, you know, for them to even make any kind of sales on it. They're just piggybacking off the hard work of what they started. So it makes sense. I support it.
Yeah. Hopefully they don't go full Nintendo on this. Supposedly they are still hunting for any remaining defendants part of this. So I think they still have that on the back of their head. But, you know, hopefully they kind of drop it for the most point and just leave it alone. We got Overwatch Season 4 coming out. Has like a new support character, which doesn't look like he's a healer, but more of a support role.
I thought he was a healer. I thought he was like a Mercy equivalent.
I'm not 100%. Then we have God of War Ragnarok got New Game Plus, which people always look forward to that. Just adds that a lot of items, you know, carry over all your abilities. But more importantly, at the beginning of the game, he had like this, some sort of fur cloak kind of thing. And that's all that people really cared about, apparently. They were so hyped that that's being included on there. Kind of, they don't really have like a transmog thing, but I feel like that would have been cool to have in the game too.
Yeah, transmog is pretty rare in single player games, I think.
Yeah. And then back over to our boys over at Sony. Sony is apparently throwing another hissy fit over here. So, to do a minor little recap here, while not set in stone, the UK's Competition and Markets Authority, we touched on them before, the CMA, it seems to be likely to approve the Microsoft Activision acquisition. Wow, that trips me up every time. And Sony, of course, is freaking pissed. So, in the latest filing by the CMA, Sony says that they're blasting Sony over their surprising, unprecedented, and irrational reversal after initially being opposed to this. But of course, that's why we have all these hearings and both sides present their evidence, because they might initially look bad, but Microsoft provided, you know, everything that they needed to. So the CMA essentially seems to be headed towards approving this particular acquisition over in Europe. The lashing out essentially came last Thursday, that they criticized the UK for essentially accepting Microsoft's math when it came to forecasting how many users Sony might lose if Call of Duty became an exclusive. But once again, there hasn't really been any talk of that. And Microsoft is adding that, given that offer. I mean, like a decade of guaranteed performance, right? They guaranteed not only that the game won't be an exclusive, but that they won't even lose any current stability or anything like that. It's going to be the same exact game. It's not going to be any ports. It's going to be the same exact game for all three platforms. And of course, we're talking about Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo.
Sony was never going to win. I think that was our prediction from the jump.
Mm-hmm. They were just being bullies. And honestly, I promise it's coming strictly from the higher percentage that they were gathering from those sales.
Yep, they're going to have to figure out how to survive without the profits of Call of Duty so their IPs can remain afloat. That's what it's going to come down to. I don't think Microsoft is going to honor whatever the old percentages were, but they will continue releasing the Call of Duties for the next 10 years once Sony signs on that contract, because they still have to agree to it, that they're going to receive it for the next 10 years under that new payment. I haven't seen them agree to that publicly yet.
Sony, no, not at all.
So honestly, it's in their, you know, or my words, it's in their court.
Oh,
yeah, the ball's in their court. They have to still agree to those terms. They're still wanting the whole deal to fall so they can keep whatever it is that they have, but it's already looking like that's not going to be the case. So the next step is now to just, you know, one, however many hundreds of thousands they've paid in lawyer fees just to deal with this, now they have to bring them in to review the 10-year contract and spend more money on that. It's just, I don't know. They're just making all the poor decisions around this. But they're doing what they have to try to make the best bang for their buck, I guess. But it's just, you could have seen it from a mile away. Us as laymans, not in corporate, you know, environments, were able to predict that outcome I don't understand why they went that route to begin with. It's just crazy to me.
Yeah, no, I hear you, Ben. But we'll see what comes out of this. Let's go ahead and talk about our boys over at Asus. I like Asus better. They seem to be throwing their hat in the ring against the handheld world. Looks like back on April Fool's, there has been kind of some leaks and some SKUs that were found where they're coming up with a Steam Deck competitor. And it's not too terrible. It actually looks pretty okay. And it looks like it's going to be running Windows 11, powered by AMD APU. Looking at about a 7-inch display, coming in with 1080p at 120 hertz.
I saw that vid. It looks sick. Yeah, it's interesting because, like you said, they released a video showcasing it on April 1st, right? Which is known as April Fool's Day. And corporations, companies worldwide are known to just troll their fan base or their consumers on this day by announcing things that aren't real, you know, left and right. And it makes it very difficult to accept something like this because I know when I saw it, I'm like, oh, it says April 1st on the tag. So I didn't believe it. But what made it interesting was the fact that in that video was a link to Best Buy. And you go to the Best Buy website to sign up for an update once the handheld console is released for pre-order. So on the one side, they announced it on April 1st, but then they had a legitimate like follow-up system set in place. And they haven't, at least from what I've seen, they haven't confirmed, like, no, this wasn't a joke. They're just sitting on letting people try to, you know, Schrodinger's freaking console here. Like, is it going to happen or not? And I think it was done mostly because they wanted to see if people were interested in it before they went into mass production. I think it was more so of a way to test how people would receive another handheld console. Because remember, LG also made one to compete against the Steam Deck, which I think is completely random. But it makes more sense for Asus to do it because, one, they make phones. And so that it's not too far-fetched for them to jump into this. They make computer hardware, like internal computer hardware. LG makes peripherals. So it's just one of those things that I think it's within their wheelhouse to succeed in. We'll see how it actually fares if it comes into fruition. But yeah, I found it a very interesting tactic for them to kind of like get a feel for from the public. Because like I said, they did have a system in place for you to sign up. I signed up just to see if it was real. And I'm waiting to hear back. Still haven't heard from them about that.
At a glance, it looks like it is, to be honest. I just think the timing was unfortunate.
Well, I don't know if it was. I think it was deliberate because there's no way, you know, that it, because they decide when it's going to release. There's no way no one at the table knew that April 1st was April Fool's. I think it was deliberate just to see how the people would fare with it, because it makes it memeable. And if you can make something memeable, you basically get free advertising.
This is true, but I've also worked in corporate America. And yeah, sometimes those dates definitely go over people's heads. Two quick things. Since we are in April, we do have a couple games coming out.
Mega Man Battle Network.
And since it is April, we do have a couple games coming out. So we have Hogwarts Legacy on PS4 and Xbox One. Mega Man Battle Network for Tortuga. Of course, we touched on Star Wars Jedi Survivor. And then, of course, being stuck in development hell forever, we now officially have Dead Island 2 coming out.
Very nice, yeah. A lot of good games to carry us through the second quarter of the year. And we all know that the beginning of the third quarter is when we get all the hype. Or I guess the end of the second quarter, right? Because it's the end of we get all the hype for all the games. So this is a very lull period in the gaming community. So it's a good time for, you know, those games that are not going to last forever, but are going to be entertaining for the meantime to come out, get us through this little hump. So I'm excited for it because we all know that the big hitters always come out towards Christmas time. So we need things to keep us afloat till then.
Yes, no, that is absolutely true. And then, of course, we have Redfall and Zelda coming out in May to kind of carry on. And yeah, Zelda's going to completely consume me.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. So I need Battle Network just to keep me involved on the Switch because it hasn't seen the light of day since I completed Pokemon. So, yep, can't wait for that. So the last thing that I have is mostly about the D&D movie that came out recently. And the fact that it's being so well received by the D&D community from everything that I've seen thus far. I haven't seen anyone really complain about it. I haven't seen anyone talk bad about it. I think, honestly, I've given the hardest critic regarding this movie. Because while entertaining, I already discussed it, I think, with you, that the animatronics were lacking. And it might have been intentional by design or whatever, but I just felt like, you know, they could have implemented a little bit more CGI on certain parts of the movie just to give it that continuing feel of immersion. The animatronics that were used kind of killed it a little bit for me, but the story overall was great. It was entertaining, and it felt like a D&D campaign. Which, you know, was what everyone was hoping for and they succeeded in. And additionally, I don't think you've seen the movie yet, but they introduced basically a lot of new, like, lore or information, or updated some lore and information. And with that, they included, like, new items, magical items that they showcase and, you know, they went looking for throughout the campaign. And Wizards of the Coast, you know, a couple days ago, actually released those items into, like, with written rules on how to use them. I'm not going to discuss too much because if you haven't seen the movie, not that it gives too much away, but it's just the fact that there's about four items that, you know, completely out of nowhere, and they used it in the movies, and you were like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then a couple days ago, Wizards of the Coast released actual instruction on, you know, the distance that those items work, how they work, how to attune, what like actual core rules that is involved around magic items explained and written so people can actually bring them into their own campaigns if they want to, which I think was pretty neat.
That's pretty cool. I feel like there's something else that did something similar that came out like in a movie, or then it's just like implemented in the game, but it is not coming to my head right now.
Who, Wizards?
No, not the Wizards specifically. I think it was another franchise. Or maybe it was like something that was fan made that was made into it, but overall, it's pretty cool to see them implement items from the movie and just throw them in game, have those rules ready. That's pretty interesting.
And just because we're on the topic of Wizards, I don't have too much information on it. But I want to say 2 days ago, they announced their first draft on the OGL licensing thing. So they released it to content creators to review and to provide feedback. I haven't seen much about that, but I just want to make note that they did release a new document, which is being combed over by the entire community. But nothing has popped up yet that is putting Wizards back into the ring regarding that. Which is good, because if something, you know, were to exist that was incredibly bad, like the first time, it would have made headlines already. But I'm waiting for the educated people who can actually navigate those documents to, you know, get a feel and put out what they find. If anything, there may be a perfect document where Wizards does it completely right by the community, and, you know, and that's the end of that.
All right, well, that's pretty legit, so hopefully we hear something soon. I got one last thing that I completely forgot in my notes here, but we do have global release times for Diablo 4. Mike Ibarra, president of Blizzard Entertainment, clarified people who order the deluxe and ultimate versions will be able to play on June 1st, 4 p.m. In the U.S., 12 a.m. in Europe, and then June 2nd, 8 a.m. in Asia. And then regular launch is going to be on June 5th at 4 p.m., June 6th, 12 a.m. Europe, and then June 6th, 8 a.m. in Asia. So remember, for pre-order of the, I don't know if it's just a basic or it looks like it's just a deluxe and ultimate, get that 3-day early access.
Yeah, that seems to be like the new.
Yeah, I think Hogwarts had something like that, right? Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, though, and it's just so clever that they're at the same time stamping the $79.99 tag price for deluxe editions, and then the $69.99 for non-deluxe, early access editions, and it's just enforcing the fact that the $60 games era is over; it's completely gone. But they're masking it with this whole, oh, if you pay a little extra, you get it a little early, which is what you really want. And you kind of just ignore the fact that the base price of the game is well over the $60 games that we were used to for the longest times.
Yep, those times are definitely over. I think the only one who has gave a more hardcore stance on it, surprisingly, is Nintendo. That they very likely have it for not all of their first-party games. They did put out an official statement that they're going to review that $70 price tag on a game-by-game basis. The first, of course, being Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah, because that one's coming out at 70, right? I want to say yes on that. Yeah. Yeah. So it was long overdue. We did the math. I forgot how long ago,
it's been a while.
It's something like if game prices kept up with inflation, we should be paying close to like $85, $90 a game, based on what we were paying for cartridges back in the 90s. Because back then a game was $20, but $20 in the 90s went a long way compared to $20 today. Or should I say the late 1900s?
Relax.
But yeah, it's definitely interesting to think about. So we're still behind the curve when you look at it that way. Games could be more expensive. They have every right to be. Costs have gone up with inflation and just in general. So we're still behind the curve in that sense. So we can't complain too much. And the $60 price range lasted way longer than it should have, like in general, because normally it goes up every new generation of console games. And that didn't happen for two generations in a row. So we were behind the curve in that sense as well. So it was bound to happen.
Oh, it definitely, definitely truly was. One last quick thing. Resident Evil 4 came out, the remake, not so long ago. And Capcom threw in like a surprise microtransaction where you can pay money, essentially upgrade your guns.
Again, microtransactions in single player games, it just, the logic's not there for me.
It's kind of like the ones for Assassin's Creed, where you get like materials or I forgot what they called it. It was like Helix points and something else, but they call them time savers in Assassin's Creed, and it's essentially the same thing for this one.
So it's things that you can gain access to without paying real money for. It's just you get it earlier if you pay for it.
Right.
Yeah, I mean,
completely optional, 100%. Yeah. It's not like the grind is atrocious. So like I'm okay with this because it's not like you need it.
Sure. Yeah, it's just cool, I guess.
Sure. That's going to be it for me, bro.
All right. That's going to be it for me as well. So I'm going to head and thank all of you for hanging out with us yet another week. Definitely check our links in the description below for access to all of our other content. You can always reach out to us via Twitter at @2guys1level. Let us know what you thought of this episode, any previous episodes, and what you'd like for us to discuss in any future episodes. Again, thank you all for hanging out with us, and we will catch you all next time. Till then.